This content is for institutional investors and information purposes only. It does not contain investment, financial, legal, tax, or any other advice and should not be relied upon for this purpose. The materials are not tailored to your particular, personal, and/or financial position. If you require advice based on your specific circumstances, you should contact a professional advisor. Opinions expressed are those of the speakers as of the date of publication, are subject to change without notice, and do not necessarily reflect Mercer's opinions. Hello and welcome to Critical Thinking, Critical Issues. I'm Orla Ahern, a senior investment consultant in Ireland. And today we're coming to you live from Mercer's Global Investment Forum in Dublin to discuss what does leadership look like. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Michael Lernihan, Global Sales and Proposition Leader, and by the well-renowned former rugby player Ronan O'Gara. So for those of you who may not be familiar with Ronan, Ronan is currently head coach at professional rugby club La Rochelle in France. And you've had tremendous success with La Rochelle, Ronan, winning the European Champions Cup the last 2 years. So Ronan's coaching career began around 11 years ago at this stage with another French club, Racing 92. And this was followed then by a 2 year stint with the Crusaders in New Zealand as an assistant defence coach before joining La Rochelle in 2019. Of course, prior to that, you had a hugely successful career as a player, both with Munster and with Ireland, winning 128 caps for Ireland, 3 Triple Crowns and the Grand Slam in 2009. Now, Ronan and I are both from Bishopstown in Cork, and we both went to the same primary school, Scullins Bridnave. It seems like many years ago at this stage. Then in secondary school, as you know, your mother was one of my teachers, so I can remember us all keeping an eye on how Miss O'Gara's son was getting on with Munster and with Ireland. So it's really great to have you here today and to have the opportunity to chat to you.
Thank you, Arlis.
It's such an interesting introduction and so warming to hear that, because it's the first time I think I've sat in a room and 20 years listening to something like that, obviously, because it's Scullins Bridnave, the memories come rushing back, Bishopstown Community School. My mother, obviously, because I've been out of the country 10 years. So the relationship changes with your parents when you're a bit away. And then you forget completely about the playing side, because when you're doing what you do and in leadership and in coaching and in business, it's kind of the next day and you never look back, you know. But that was a cool intro and thank you for that, because for me it's about dealing with people, you know, about making people feel good about themselves. And people sometimes move quickly on as opposed to taking a moment to pause and appreciate what's good and what I should be grateful for. And there's a lot to be grateful for there, obviously. And it was a special introduction, so thank you.
Thank you, Ronan. So Ronan and Michael, you're both here today to share your thoughts and insights in the topic of leadership. So I suppose, Ronan, first of all, in your coaching career with La Rochelle, you've spoken previously about the importance of building a connection with each team member and getting to know your team. So can you tell us a little bit about the importance of that to you, please?
Yeah, well, I try to be the same person at, shall we say, work, but I don't work at rugby than I would be at home, you know. So there's no putting on a mask, or there's no two different split personalities, you know. I think so the players would see me exactly how I behave with my kids, even though my kids would speak, I would say, honestly, a little bit more negatively towards that, because I do suffer from, I suppose, mood changes, because winning is important and performance is important. And they've established, it's very funny actually, between them, the five of them, they have a code word of SR, Sunday Rage, if we lose on a Saturday night. So they're quite smart in that regard, to decide what dad's humour is going to be like on Sunday, whether we can push him on this or not. And we like to go for a cycle, and they hate going for a cycle on Sundays, you know. And I'm talking a very leisurely thing. So it's just interesting how we all have this very different vision of ourselves, how potentially balanced we are, how composed we are, how much we're in charge of our environment, of our team. But the biggest thing for me would be the kids would give you, and your wife would give you the best, honest resume of where you are. But coming back to your question, obviously, getting to know each and every one, it's a team sport. played by individuals, yet individuals are so different.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship with one as opposed to another guy is so different as well. And some guys need a lot of love. Other guys need constant poking, that you feel that there's a lot more in them. If you know a certain player is given so much, then you probably need to encourage him. But then if there's a guy at 20% of his potential, you can't be encouraging that guy. Sorry, you can encourage him, but you need to be strong with him and kind of go, well, I see your ceiling way higher, and there's a difference in opinion here about what you're giving to the team and what I'm seeing and what potentially could come. So that is very, very interesting. But then I think what so many people in leadership forget is that you have a staff, and
yeah,
the staff members range from maybe whatever 30 to 60, but staff members have egos as well. And not alone who players have egos, but staff members have egos, and a person in their 50s may have a problem in trying to work something out with a colleague. And I'm kind of saying, well, you don't come to me, you've got to come to him and or her and say, well, I don't like this or I like this. And but everything has got to do with, I suppose, relationships. But I would do a lot of coaching around values and the fact that we'd establish values in our building, different from the clubs, because the club would have their values, but I don't sometimes resonate with all of them. So I try and create team values. And if this is how we want to measure ourselves, and it'd only be 5, maybe sometimes 3 per year, per season. But if you kind of make them important words in your culture, then I feel that you can continuously measure yourself. So it's fascinating. Every day is a learning day, Orla. Michael, you know, that's the way I am. I don't take myself too seriously either. We mess a lot. We have a lot of fun, but then we get serious sometimes because it's rugby, it's sport. Some guys think they're geniuses, they're not. But some of them are very close to being really good rugby players. And what floats their boat certainly does not float my boat, but that's all right. You got to accept that, and you got to understand that some of these guys are 30 years younger than me now if they start at 17, you know? So it's a big age difference. But
something that really struck a chord with me there was what you referenced about sort of the authentic, it comes across very authentic, and anything I've ever heard from you always does, which I think is hugely admired by most people here in Ireland. But what you referenced about basically being the same person when you're at home and with your family, or when you're coaching, or when you're at work. Earlier in my career, that's definitely something I would have struggled with. I kind of had this, which is in hindsight is a misconception, that you sort of have to present this in a professional sense, whatever it may be, but a different facade. But I did find that work and life got a lot easier when you kind of stopped caring about that, and you at least just showed up in a way that would be the same if you're out for a pint with your mates, or if you're dealing with your friends, or if you're with your family.
What experiences too, isn't it? And self-belief and perception versus reality, because sometimes the perception isn't the reality, and we might touch on that later on, and the fact that just... You've 2 European Cup titles, but so say if I was beaten in 2 semi-finals and I didn't have medals, then how would you be perceived? I would say differently. And it's not right, that. And it's the same for any young boy or girl looking to make a breakthrough. Everyone will slap them on the back when they've done it. But like, we need to support and kind of remember these challenges for people when they're not getting, shall we say, silverware in sport, because silverware is extremely, extremely difficult to do, but it shouldn't diminish people's respect or opinion of these people just because at the minute they don't have titles. But it's the same thing. Speaking of that, I think growing up in Bishopstown, it was the parish priest, the bank manager, and the Gardaí who were the pillars of society. And it hasn't worked out so well in a few cases, has it?
That's Ronan, very true.
Can I ask, do you consciously celebrate success? I was curious in your, because I would say from my perspective, similar, you mentioned the desire to win, and whether that's a game or whether that's a you know, professionally speaking, I think having that drive is really important. But I sometimes find that when you win, you get this sense of relief rather than maybe pure joy. And obviously when you lose, whatever that may mean, it can be tough and you need to regroup and reconsider. Is it somewhat an equilibrium for you? Because I saw the recent La Rochelle, just the recent victory, and what I felt was great to see, it really felt like you were genuinely celebrating that. It was just a real joy. Is that?
I think It would be remiss of me not to mention, I suppose, the impact of the teams I've been associated with. Playing with Munster at my time was a very special team, which I think connected the whole province, and the supporters were just incredible for me, you know, to kind of carry you through bad times, but also were there to have your back so many other times. And then the joy you got out of winning the European Cup for Munster was very, very special. And then I think it was the attraction of trying to do that as a coach with La Rochelle. There was a lot of similarities between the drive, the ambition, the want and the love for rugby in La Rochelle. And when it did happen, I think everyone saw the scenes where it was an outpouring of joy, where literally everyone lost the run of themselves for a week. It was a week's party. But I don't think that changes whether you're 27 or 47. That, I think, as you say, if it means so much to you, that outpouring of joy and celebration was very, very natural. It was more, okay, day five, I've got to kind of maybe try and slip away now. But I didn't want to slip away. I wanted to keep on eating and drinking and having good fun with people that you've done a great year with.
Yeah.
And what means more to you, winning the Champions Cup or the Heineken Cup, as a player or as a coach?
I think it's so different. It's nearly incomparable, the roles, because they're two different careers. You know what I mean? A player, it's just nothing like being a coach. I think there is enormous internal satisfaction when the pieces of the jigsaw come together as a coach, if I could put it to you that way. You feel you're responsible for putting it all together, yet having huge trust and faith in your assistants to leave them work and be the best they can be and don't interfere, but also trying to align it. So for me, when you're the coach or the manager and it comes together, it's 50 times more powerful than as a player. Because as a player, all the great players are selfish because they only think about themselves, and that's what makes them great, because they have to get their role right. When you're the manager, the head coach, you have to connect everyone and manage people that they feel valued. Feeling valued is very, very underestimated and very, very powerful. If that's a guy who has a valuable role for 80 minutes in a game or 2 minutes in a game, for the bigger picture, it's of same importance. And, you know, that was a great learning for me, because I played whatever out half for Ireland in the number 10 jersey for a long, long time. And then Johnny Sexton came along and I was kind of at the end, he was the number 10 jersey and I was the number 21 jersey. But the learnings in the number 21 jerseys were fascinating for me, to stand me in such good stead to try and do this career well, because it's unthinkable, really, to think when you've had 10 years as a number one, you see the world so differently when you see it as a bit player. And for those of you that aren't too familiar with sport, as the numbers 23 to 30 don't even get to put on a jersey or on match day. They warm up, hoping really, if they have any ambition, that someone in the first 23 gets injured. Yeah. Not in a spiteful way,
yeah, I know,
but in a competitive way. And they have to have that. But imagine if you have repeat moments of that and you're doing that at test level for 6 years, 7 years, you need a great guy to keep his or her stock very high.
It actually relates hugely to even what we do as a firm, in the sense that if you look back over time and some of our kind of client successes where they've done certain things or they've achieved their goals, it's almost impossible that anyone individually would be driving that. It's that analogy of kind of winning as a team sport. And it really is, because if you're drawing on expertise or knowledge from different people, you have to be open to that and forming a group of colleagues together that can give the best representation of the firm, of our advice back to clients. It's even today we see regularly situations where our colleagues, when they're connected well with each other and when they show up as a team, even when they've got different skill sets, that's ideal when they have different skill sets, but when they do show up like that, we're just the best representation of the firm. And it's something maybe comes naturally to smaller countries versus larger countries, but culture starts to feed into that a little bit. Just encouraging people, whether they're physically in the same office or even on the same level team from a Mercer perspective, when they do collaborate and connect with each other, it can be transformational. Mm. What we can do for clients. Mm.
And your team in La Rochelle, I mean, naturally there are some French players on it, but you know, you've lots of nationalities. I think there's an Irish guy, Alton Dillon, as well. And I suppose from my experience in Mercer, like, our world is becoming much more diverse. Like, even within our team in Mercer, it's much more multicultural and diverse than it was a few years ago. Increasingly now we're working with other offices and people in other offices. And even our client base, I think, is evolving a lot and becoming a lot more diverse. And I think, you know, for me personally, I do very much appreciate the benefits of diversity. I very much believe in bringing different viewpoints into a room and collaborating with different people. But, you know, I suppose it's not without its challenges as well. And what have been the key cultural differences, I guess, you've experienced going from Ireland to France to New Zealand and back to France again?
It's been turned on its head completely. Obviously, growing up in Cork, I never, you know, I didn't leave till I was 35. So you see the world so differently, you know, and you think you're a small but open, but you're completely closed, you know. And then I went to live in Paris, for which is extremely multicultural and diverse, for nearly 5 years. Then you go to Christchurch. But that was so interesting, in the fact that you were dealing with a lot of you know, Pacific Island players from Tonga, Samoa, Wallis, Fiji, all those little islands, you know, and just, you know, you kind of realize sometimes that there's a bit of fate in the world, or there's, you know what I mean? I was unbelievably lucky to cross paths with Scott Robertson, who was transformational for me. Growing up in Cork, I suppose it would have been a glass half empty attitude, as opposed to now it's completely the opposite. You know, you can see the possibilities with and potential with things, but just learning to how to deal with different players from different backgrounds, from different countries, where, because a lot of those countries are taken aback about, they're quite poor, you know, Tonga and Samoa, Fiji a little bit better, but there's very, very basic quality of life over there, you know. So these kids coming out of it was seen as an opportunity, and then how you speak to them and how sensitive they are. And it was just great to see how Scott dealt with these. We did, as I said to you, we did the personality profiling,
yes,
which was very, very interesting, yeah, because it got more powerful the more buy-in you got from a group, and a group of 70 people referring to purple dots or red dots or blue dots or yellow, yeah, dots or red dots, you know, and then how, from a coaching point of view, it can shut some people down if you give them too much detail, if they're not a red dot, for example, you know.
Yeah.
But then there are other people that are creative or need detail and understand the why, and give me exactly my role here, please.
Yeah.
And so then you had that, and then coming back to La Rochelle, where in France, yeah, you have nearly every nationality in the world in the league, you know. So in my group, we have Argentinians, Georgians, Australians, New Zealands, Samoan, Tongan, Fiji, English, French, Spanish, and obviously so many of them from African backgrounds as well.
Yeah.
So, but the most important thing, Orla, is that it becomes a strength, because we don't look upon it as, where is he from? It's, we kind of have established a culture where these guys play their best rugby for Stade Rochelais. And it, we don't look upon it, well, he's from whatever, Ireland, or this guy's from France. Everyone speaks French. That's the language in the room. And there are brilliant apps nowadays. You can see guys with phones. They have the capacity to live translate when people are speaking in French into English, you know. So there's no lagging time for slipping off the back of the bus, you know.
It sounds like, certainly for me, what you described, the multicultural nature of work, and it's genuinely, particularly over the last maybe 5-6 years, the most enjoyable part is trying to not figure that out, but just unpick that and really immerse yourself in that, kind of what makes people tick in different ways. I like the way you talked about the insights or the profiling and the different colours. It can be really helpful to know where people are coming from, but it comes across that it's something you're quite passionate about, that the kind of with a national team, people are closer to the same background generally, whereas with a club team, it can be really, really diverse.
It very, and it keeps coming back to, it's just about creating memories with good people. Like, I think now you're driven by winning medals, but at the end of the day, when you're on the coach, it's the memories you have of people you coach, people you played with, people you care about, people you actually love a lot. The Fijian, I have a Fijian, he's very, very special in my team, you know, that would mean You mean it's an honor to coach a guy like that. That's what makes me get out of bed every morning, the fact that I can see how much this guy gives to a team, to a bunch of people, to a town, year after year after year, keeps showing up. You know, he's and he started from nothing. You know, this isn't a superstar, you know. Yeah. This is a guy who was given an opportunity and has grasped it and has made his family incredibly proud, and now is a legend in the town. Lavinia Bhatia is his name, and it's for reasons like that that you're in sport, because you feel a massive amount of internal satisfaction that you have a role in him being able to shine.
And just to pick up on the personality testing, because that's something that fascinates me. I mean, I'm a real blue. I'm detail oriented. I'm organized, but like, I don't like taking risks and I overthink everything. So I always, you know, analyze people within my own team and I have them assigned different colors, but it's not someone we do outwardly in Mercer. And I'm not sure if I'd get the buy-in if I made the suggestion. Like when you were in New Zealand, were the players really up for it? Did they really buy into that whole concept?
Yeah, and I think it was obviously established a season or two before I arrived. So I was a late entry. But for me to kind of come from an outside person into an established environment where they had the capacity to understand what information each and every player needed and staff member to get the best out of delivery of message in a meeting was fascinating.
Yeah.
And then when they kind of, I suppose, they enjoyed laughing when I was profiled because I had a few dots. And obviously, you know, Scott Robertson is a purple dot because he can't close. He's on to the next thing, you know, he can't close and connect the dots. So he needs someone kind of picking up his analyst behind him, picking up the pieces to kind of, because he's already on to the next kind of play or creative thought that comes into his creative mind, you know. So it was very interesting. And then they were kind of like, well, how do we categorize this Irish man? You know, he's crazy.
I have found that I did it myself 15 years ago and I had to do it. Actually, it's funny you say it. I had to do it a week ago for a meeting I have on Friday with a new team or a mixture of people who know each other and people who don't. And I did go back to the prior one to take a look because I was curious, does it change? Can it change?
Yeah.
And there was actually a bit of change in it. There was a bit more yellow and green and some of the red was kind of gone back towards the middle. Yeah. So it's interesting how as you get a bit older, some of these traits change.
Just in terms of different leadership styles, Ronan, so, I mean, in the earlier years, you had a lot of exposure to Declan Kidney. He was your coach in Prez, in your secondary school Prez, with Munster and with Ireland. And my understanding is then it was when you started playing with the Lions that was your first exposure to, I suppose, leadership from different countries. Can you tell us a little bit about the different leadership styles that you came across at that time?
I've seen a lot, Arla. So over a long number of years, you know, I suppose, but kicking off at Munster, obviously, was very, very much earned the right to speak, kind of a mentality, while that wouldn't be acceptable nowadays, but it was more do your talking on the pitch and then contribute in meetings, while that shouldn't be the case. But that was where it was. It was more old school back then, but that's okay. One of the great values of our learnings of spending such time with an awful lot of natural leaders in that Munster and Irish setup in my, I suppose, formative years is the amount of good people you saw and how they carried themselves. And some of them, leadership is such an interesting word because one of the most impressive leaders could be a guy who speaks once every 6 months in a rugby dressing room. But his acts speak louder than words. Yeah. And that's, I think, where in sport it's a little bit different to business because we all see leadership very differently, I think. And some players, staff appeal more to different people. And there's, even in sport, there isn't a, so you look upon past players and their perception of previous managers, there would be a huge variety of different opinions offered. Depending on, as we started off this conversation, with what is your relationship, what is your connection like with a certain player or coach? And depending on what the coach, I suppose, has done for you, then he'll either stick in your head or he won't stick in your head. Over the years, it was obviously, I played all my club rugby with Munster, one club, and then Ireland, and then the Lions. So you saw so many different leadership styles, but none of them were really wacky, to be honest, you know?
Yeah.
I liked your earlier reference to kind of, and it sounds, I know it's an easy thing to say, but I imagine it was a hard thing to do, was the glass half empty versus the glass half full. I think it even comes across in your answer there, like there's a real sense of positivity about kind of what people could achieve versus maybe what might go wrong.
And I was exactly one of them. You know, I would have been a disaster to coach. You know what I mean? So I put my hand up there and say, no problem. Because I would have challenged the coach, because we didn't lack for hunger or drive or motivation. But a lot of the coaches that I had at the time, that was their strong point. While from a selfish point of view, I would have loved a Guardiola or a tactician that would be able to completely throw a cat amongst the pigeons from a technical point or tactical point of view, yeah, in a game or leading up to a game. While it was more bigger picture coaches I had who got the environment right, who were excellent at that and were very caring and concerning. So, and it all depends on what stage of your career you're at too and what floats your boat, you know? Yeah. But if someone presented something to me, I go, that'll never work. And now, if a player did that to me, I'd be like, oh, wow, look at this close, negative, dull person. But that would have been me as a player, because I wouldn't have seen the possibilities, because I think you need to live that as opposed to get it from work experience or from dipping into a place for 3 weeks, going to 2 years in Crusaders where the environment was incredibly positive, but not fake positive. And the buy-in from people and the actual support, encouraging, setting up people to succeed is fascinating without being threatened, because secure people share ideas, insecure people close up and get threatened.
Well, look, thank you very much, both Ronan and Michael, for your fascinating insights, and thank you for your openness and candor. So from Mercer's Global Investment Forum in Dublin, if you liked this content and would like to hear more, please do subscribe to the podcast.